Today, your guest host, Karen Benton, is here. Karen is a mother, nurse practitioner, certified body talk practitioner, Franklin Method instructor, and owner of Limitless Living LLC. Joyful, abundant, and bursting with energy. Here is your guest host, Karen Benton.
Oh, good morning or good afternoon, depending on where you are in the world. This is Karen Benton, and welcome to The Truth is Funny on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm so honored to be the regular guest for Colette's show every third Wednesday of the month. Please stay with us for the next hour. Our show this month is taking a deep dive into an author, healer, mystic, therapist, and all-around amazing woman who inspires people that she comes in contact with, that get to read her work and just hear her beautiful voice. As always, the intent of these shows is to enliven within each listener their own capacity to create and experience transformation. We see here transformation as an inside job and desire to inspire and fan the flame of wisdom that lies within you to actualize this truth in your own life. We are here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the airwaves, transformationtalkradio.com, and for the shows that I host every third Wednesday of the month, you can find podcasts at karenbenton.com. They're available for every show, and repeated listening has been found to be a powerful gateway for radical change. We love for you to call in with comments, questions, shares, or even just to say hello and connect, particularly today, in the climate that the world is sitting in. 1-800-930-2819. We'd love to hear from you. Together, we can transform life's conflicts and challenges into possibilities and potentials with ease and fun. My guest today is a quite inspiring woman. I actually happened to meet her in Costa Rica when we were both on a retreat. Her voice alone just kind of magnetizes you to her. And then when I found out she was working on a book, and a year transpired and we met again on the retreat and she had completed that book. To me, that is an achievement that so many of us yearn to experience. The desire to explore a project and then actually complete the project and then offer it to the world. Wendy, in addition to all these amazing traits, is trained as a psychotherapist and has been in private practice for nearly a decade in Colorado and New Mexico. She holds not one, not two, but three master's degrees, two from St. John's College, the first in Eastern classics and philosophies, with a Sanskrit concentration, and the second in liberal arts. Her third master's is in contemplative psychotherapy in counseling from Naropa University in Boulder, Colorado. She studied in cultural anthropology with a specialization in Mayan civilization, ancient culture, and the Pueblo cultures of the American Southwest. All of her education has greatly fed and influenced her practice today. I feel like I can't read anymore, and we need to bring her in and hear from her own words this amazing path. Wendy, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh my goodness. My heart is just bursting wide open. I'm so delighted to be here. Thank you.
I am particularly intrigued by the combination of degrees that you have. With my background in medicine, I was sort of indoctrinated to believe that wisdom was the knowledge you acquired from reading books. And it took me a really, really long time to broaden that definition and realize how much my soul lit up by connecting to really the field of wisdom held within my own landscape. But I'm wondering, I don't know how to say it, but cultural anthropology, Mayan civilizations, tell me, what did that offer you in the field of therapy that you were engaged in, I would imagine early on in your career? Are you still working as a therapist?
Yes, I am working as a spiritual mentor and guide, not as a therapist anymore. But I, of course, bring all of that medicine and wisdom from my psychotherapeutic training and experience with me.
But I want the world to know, what is the difference between a spiritual, you know, those two things?
Well, what a lovely question. So I do a lot of mystical practices and a lot of shamanic practices. And as a poet and a writer as well, there were the last few years that I was working as a psychotherapist, I just found myself feeling, for me personally, that it was like I couldn't bring my whole self fully into the room with a client because I was really wanting to bridge some other practices with them. And that is not to say that I could not have continued on as a psychotherapist bringing some of those things in. But for me, there was just, there were so many inner promptings that were asking to be liberated from being just one thing.
Well, what was the population that you worked with that sort of led to this experience?
Well, I've always worked primarily with women and children. I worked with men briefly when I was working at a center in Santa Fe, a residential treatment center. So I've always worked with individuals and groups. And I've done everything from teaching meditation to storytelling groups, poetry therapy, so many play therapy, so many different beautiful doorways into the psyche. And it just really feels like there are so many doorways into the psyche. So whatever's feeling congruent at the time, you know, socially and with whoever I'm with in the room, including, you know, this in shamanic practices, we might call what you and I are doing the ordinary world. But then I'm often interfacing with what is called the non-ordinary world. So with helping spirits and, you know, different medicinal energies that can be present to walk with us. So yeah, there's so much.
I mean, I can very much resonate, you know, with my years in medicine. I don't think I had as much clarity as you as to where I was going. I just knew I needed to leave the form of medicine that I was in, and my path continued to reveal itself to me. And it's interesting. Would you say that the drive to explore beyond what you knew at the moment when you were in your therapy practice came from a desire to help the people more or to fulfill a yearning within your own inner landscape?
Oh my gosh, both. Absolutely both. I mean, I feel like it really started from a very sort of primal place within me. And there was a deep trusting that has taken many years to continue to step into and actually listen to and practice, but a trusting that if something is really calling forth from within me, it is also being reflected outside of me because we are connected.
I'm going to stop you even for a moment. Would you say that a calling from within you or in anyone could show up in the form of anxiety, worry, depression, or forms like that? Do you see those types of experiences as a calling from within?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that all of our experiences are information. And they all belong on, you know, what I would refer to as the altar of our lives. They're all messengers. They all have some sort of little prompt or something for us to listen to and understand and be present with.
You say it so beautifully. And it's such, you know, in the climate that we can't ignore is going on right now with this global, there's so many different words being used, but we'll just summarize it with the pandemic, that there can be a lot of emotions. Mm-hmm. And we have a framework that often defines those emotions as being wrong or needing fixing or something that requires a redirection, mm-hmm. or an indication that I think of it summed up as being needing to be fixed. And yeah. Here you are offering us this platform to see it as an invitation. Mm-hmm. Or how else would you describe it?
Well, I love that idea of it being an invitation. Absolutely. A lot of the work that I do is centered around nervous system work. Mm. And so, you know, I feel like no matter what sort of emotion or experience is popping up for us, it is an invitation to find out where we are, body, heart, mind, spirit, soul. And there are ways to be with fear that can be super helpful. There are ways to be with any of our experiences that can be very life-affirming and helpful to see what is really being asked of us in this moment. I mean, fear can be an incredibly, you know, dare I say, holy response to what's happening in our environment and some sort of invitation for us to get safe. And that's a really important prompt to listen to, whether it's literally a saber-toothed tiger, or it's a you know, an old story that's flooding our system that's asking to be held and organically shifted because we're holding it in some way to be able to reach more clarity and truth about what's really at the heart of who we are in the moment.
It's so powerful. I mean, even when you say saber-toothed tiger, I have to throw in there a little share of my own of last night. Mm-hmm. I mean, the dream was I was literally climbing up a very sandy mountain to save my life. Mm-hmm. On some level, I was sort of riddled with fear. And then I literally was looking down, which this is true. And my sneakers are like 5 years old. And I was like, my sneakers have no grip. Why didn't I get new sneakers? If my sneakers only had grip, I would be able to get up this sandy mountain. Mm. And it's interesting, you know, the metaphors of those that came before, I mean, the lives of those that came before us, stand, you know, where they actually did have saber-toothed tigers or bears or, you know, mm-hmm. wildlife was more of a threat. But yet we, in today's day and age, have the exact same response and experience that shows up quite differently and perhaps doesn't even offer the same validity, depending on how you look at your life, mm-hmm. to honor, you know, the experience and see what it offers you, you know, whether that, you know, back in the day meant build a bigger fence or whatever it might be. In today's day and age, it has so many different indications, which then I want to get right to. You know, you're an author. You know, you took your incredible experiences and knowledge and time with people who were seeking support in, I would imagine, every realm of life, from addiction to depression to everything that we all seek support for in therapy. And you culminated it in this beautiful book that is at the same time so poetic. Tell us about the birth of this book.
Well, it is true that all of my experiences are absolutely gathered in some way, shape, or form inside this book. And I had known for at least a year, if not longer, that I was actually pregnant with a book, which, you know, when I say that, I always smile and feel a little silly. But it was absolutely like I just knew in my bones that I was pregnant with a book. And I tried to sort of make a book come to fruition and had gathered all of these notes and was putting all of this content together. And it just did not feel right at all. And so I set it aside. And the Mistress of Longing started coming to me literally in the dream time. And I've done a lot of work with dream analysis and paying attention to dreams. And a lot of my poetry has been inspired by dreams, but I have never, until this time, I had never received actual poems or wisdom as an offering that were not mine. So the mistress literally came to me, I would even say chanting words over me, until I said yes and woke up and padded down the stairs and typed the words out on my computer. And when I sat back and looked at them, you know, it was another very clear indication, these words do not belong to me. And what am I supposed to do with them? They're beautiful. And what do I do with them? And so I knew that they were not meant just for me, that they were meant for all of us. And I began to sit down with her. In fact, when you and I first met in Costa Rica the first year, I was in the midst of a 50-day practice of sitting down with her every day and doing a little bit of a ritual and a meditation, and then asking her a question and just getting to know her. I was beginning to dialogue with her and typing out whatever she sent through me. And I did that for 50 days until she said, okay, now we write the book. And she instructed me the whole way through. And what happened was the poem of the Mistress of Longing that she chanted over me that night, each line of the poem became a chapter. Or to follow the metaphor that we've been using a lot so far, each line became a doorway into information that she had for us about longing. And that longing is actually one of the most sacred experiences we can engage with. And she shares why. And she also gives very practical, pithy advice and steps as to how we can do that. And so it was a pleasure, and still is a pleasure, working with her. And I feel very grateful. So that's how she came into the world. And I found an amazing publisher, Woman Craft Publishing. And yeah, she's available everywhere in the world now.
I loved reading the book. And I also, in my... That the idea of, I think it's suggested maybe in the beginning of the book, that you can use it as a, just kind of randomly open a page and see what it has to offer you. And, you know, in my do good back days, you know, when I was 7 and 8 trying to please my parents, that would just be not available, right? You'd read a book from beginning to end. And I still feel on a level like I'm being a little naughty when I just kind of open a book and go right in and be like, all right, what's it have to say? And then always it offers that little pearl of wisdom that creates this incredible sense of support or new lens through which I can see whatever experience my life is. And I feel this book is super available to the world to offer that gift and that opportunity to see their life through another lens. But before we continue on with that, I do want to, just for the general audience, this idea of defining the, you know, what came to you in your dream time as not your own. there's a few things I'd like to ask or delve into a little bit about that, because even in the climate today, you know, people may be feeling fear and fearful thoughts. And what if we even apply that wisdom that you did to this, you know, meaning that your fearful thoughts and your apprehension and your reticence and these thoughts that may fall into those categories may not actually be your own either.
Yes, that's really powerful. Well, you know, going back to if we really are all connected, and I believe with everything in me that we are, that separation is an illusion. There's that, you know, and Jung talked about that. Carl Jung talked about that so much, this collective, you know, consciousness that we really are fed in some way by the communal experience. And there's two different sides of the coin to that. You know, we can really trust in that and go with that. And yet there's also that individual truth that resides in each of us that we can root into and learn how to trust. And I feel like that is is where, you know, a lot of the deep practice and the potential for collective healing actually is, for us to summon in our own critical thinker and our own critical decision maker as to what feels really true for us, and learning, well, what does my body feel like when I'm having that experience versus if I'm just caught up in
trying to figure out, right? If it's mine or not mine. Yeah.
Yes.
As opposed to, yeah, engaging
yes.
with practices.
Yes.
Which then it's impossible to take a pearl of wisdom from your book, but just one, there's so many in there. But this idea of longing, being sort of dancing with the idea of longing and desire as a pathway to gaining clarity on what is yours and what is not yours. And perhaps even offering us space to be okay with not knowing or not even needing to know whether something is actually ours or belonging to either a greater force or the world at large or humanity at large. Mm-hmm. And I think, could you speak to that a little bit? You know, longing as a path. You know, as a Catholic.
right. Yeah. Yeah.
And yet as a human who has been in the health and wellness field, oh, so powerful.
It is so powerful.
And sometimes a longing to just take a bath, you know,
yeah.
when you're in the hospital bed, or longing to be in the presence of someone you love or someone you are drawn to for no reason whatsoever is an incredibly powerful path to listen to, right?
It is.
Tell us about this longing.
Well, it seems to me as you were speaking, I just was really getting this image of how we learn so early, so many of us, to live from the neck up. And if we can't see it, reason it, bring empirical data to it, then many of us learn not to trust it. And in fact, to keep it at least at arm's length, you know?
Really a dream, right? Like, you're going to dedicate your whole life to something that came to you in a dream? Yeah,
right.
But, like,
I know.
How much does the world need this right now?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I can say I spent many years acquiring different degrees because I, too, was buying into that, and that my worth and my value would not, you know, add up to much if I couldn't sit at the table with, quote, the big boys and do, you know, deep intellectual inquiry, which I think is absolutely wonderful and very much needed, of course, in our world. And there is this whole other feast that is happening all of the time that most of us are starving for. And I think that that is the key into longing that will open the door to what is it that is really and truly going to nourish you, and unlearning, unraveling all of these things that have been placed upon us. So we're learning how to get back to our wildness.
It's so beautiful because even, you know, our wildness is often, or at least in my case, fulfilled by hugging a tree, you know,
right. Yeah,
sitting
yeah.
out. And there's so many stories that say, I don't have time for that. I wish I had time, but I have to fill in the blank, right? Mm-hmm. So this has been absolutely moving for me, mm-hmm. and I hope for the community at large. But we do need to take a break because time goes okay. so fast. But you are listening to The Truth is Funny on Transformation Talk Radio. And we are with Wendy, and we will be right back after this break to take your calls if we have any, or to continue discussing the power of longing, the wisdom and opening that Wendy offers us. We'll be right back.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
This is Debbie Pokornik with a moment for standing in your power. Self-control begins with noticing how different feelings present themselves in your body. When you're feeling sensitive, for example, your chin might quiver, tears might well up in your eyes, and your voice might catch in your throat. Anger, on the other hand, might appear as tension in your jaw, back, or arms, along with clenched fists, heat in the upper torso, scowling, and a strong desire to yell. The more aware you become of your body cues, the easier it will be to recognize when you're on the road to disaster. Choose the emotions that cause you problems, then start noticing and logging the body cues that come with them.
For information and to work with Debbie, visit empoweringnrg.com. That's empoweringnrg.com.
Do you sometimes feel overwhelmed by your mind? Powerless when it seems to spin in worry circles or bombard you with self-critical thoughts? Do you want to learn how to master your mind and feel more in control of your life? Listen to Dr. Friedman's Empowerment Radio. Shift from confusion to clarity, self-doubt to confidence, and from anxiety to peace and balance. Dr. Friedman and his many guest experts share the insights and tools you want to live with greater ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in to Empowerment Radio every first and third Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Are you ready to transform your life and embrace magical experiences? Talking to Tanis with your host Tanis McRae is here to help you find your joy in life. Tune in live every first and third Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Let's awaken your experience and create the change necessary to take back your right to choose who you are. For more about Tanis, visit TalkingToTanis.com.
We are back on The Truth is Funny. I am Karen Bettinet, and I am a regular guest host or host for Colette every third Wednesday of the month. My guest today, can you say your full name for me, Wendy? Because I'm like having that, I don't know how to say it right.
Yes, it is Wendy Havler Cherry.
Havler. That's exactly yes. How it's written. But there you go. I was sort of like, oh, I'm going to mess this up, and it's too. So there you go. She is an author. She is a therapist. She is the mystic. She is a shaman. She is offering us an opportunity to hear her experiences, her wisdom, and see how it resonates or lights us up, which is happening to me every moment on this show. And my role as host tends to meld into my role as receiver and get blended together. So before we continue, Wendy, could you please share your contact information with our audience and where they can get your amazing book, Mistress of Longing, as this beacon of light moving forward in life?
Absolutely. So you can find me at www.shegathersbeauty.com. I also post pretty much daily on social media, Instagram and Facebook at She Gathers Beauty. And The Mistress of Longing, published by Womancraft Publishing in Ireland, can be ordered directly through the publisher, which I love to do to support small business and families and women who are empowering other women in the world, which is Lucy, who is the owner and publisher, does an amazing job of that. And The Mistress of Longing is also available on Amazon.
Okay, great. And there will be a link on my website, or there is a link on my website, the event page, to her book, to her website, to everything. So that's always on KarenBetton.com. So we were exploring this, The Mistress of Longing, which is the title of your book, which I would bet to say is a culmination of your life experience merging with your creativity and opening of, you know, maybe even quite possibly your entire life up to this point. Mm-hmm. And we've been speaking much about even the idea of what lends validity and worth to us as a human, and how so many of us seek degrees and seek very traditional pathways to earn merit and worth to open up our gifts. And then merging that with, you know, something as powerful as you have described as having a line or a poem show up in the middle of the night, honoring that, going downstairs to write it down, and exploring the merging of those two worlds, right? Because you can never really separate out. So using right. that framework of how the world regularly works to bring forth a new expression of your own creativity and your own gift and your own version of wisdom. And then we're also exploring the very powerful way you refer to this information that you are getting in your dream as not belonging to you. And we sort of dipped in the idea that, well, does that possibly mean that so much of what we experience in life, maybe it isn't as personal and singular in nature as we mm-hmm. often find ourselves feeling it to be? Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add to that in the realm of the formation of this Mistress of Longing and the formation of the book? And then the transformation that you have experienced through the birth of this book.
Yeah. Well,
I wish the audience could see the big smile. She just came around. One of these days we're going to get this stuff up live. But this big smile just came across her face as she said, yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well, there's just so much that I could say. And so I will start out by saying, you know, you had asked earlier, going back to, you know, I feel like I'm really old because it was a lifetime ago that I was studying cultural anthropology and, you know, the Maya and all of that. But that was really when I began letting myself be really curious about the numinous and other worlds.
I don't even know what that is. What's the numinous?
So, well, let's see if I can give a decent and accurate definition. But it's basically the numinous is that which can't be seen. That is sacred essence or energy. We could even go as far as to say a divine presence and some way, shape, or form, but it could also be the ancestors or different helping spirits that shamanic practitioners access and that are with us all of the time. But, and it can also be if you go someplace that is either a museum or standing in front of a beautiful piece of art or in the middle of the redwoods, or any place that is beautiful on the beach in Costa Rica, and really allow yourself to open up to the feeling and essence of that place. That is a numinous experience to have. And so I feel like in many ways I've been sort of in training for all of these years to let myself receive these experiences. And I tucked that away quite neatly for many years and didn't really tell anyone what I was doing. And conformed, as we were, you know, alluding to earlier. And so when the Mistress of Longing came to me, it was in many ways a big sort of, you know, spiritual coming out for me to write a book like this. And when she came to me in the dream time and delivered these words, and when I co-wrote the book with her, this was a dynamic relationship that I was choosing to say yes to, that I was choosing to say, yes, I believe very much in my bones that this is true and that this material that cannot be seen really is true. And it's not coming from me. It's not coming from me. This poem is not my poem. And yet it did come for me because I am part of this human experience right now and I am part of the collective, but it came for so much more than just me. It came for all of us. And so that's really what I'm speaking to. You know, there are different Native American cultures that would actually practice sharing their dreams each day. And they would gather everyone because the belief is, well, you don't know that that dream came for you. It could have come, you know, for this particular elder or this newborn baby or for our entire community, so that we, you know, so that we all have access to this wisdom. So there was a sharing that would happen. And so for me, when I was able to say, this is very true for me, and I can't prove it, and that's okay.
Oh, love that. That should be a bumper sticker.
Yeah, let's make it. I love that. It was a very large, sacred yes. And it blew open all my doors. I knew that I was saying yes to The Mistress of Longing and to this book. And I did know that there was more that I was saying yes to. I didn't know exactly how that was going to look or take shape or form in my life, but it really did transform my life in huge ways, where I have been able to unleash who I really am and what my true longings have been. And, you know, I have recently left a life that, I've left a 20-year marriage, a 20-year relationship with a wonderful man, and a wonderful life. And I left it because I was saying yes to what I had been so hungry for so many years. And I fell in love with a woman, and I am living with that woman now. And we have a very meaningful and magical relationship that is unfolding. And I picked up my entire life and left one magical location and moved to another. And so there's been a huge restart button that has been pushed as a result of saying yes, and really a big leap and trust that what's living in my bones is really meant for me, and that I get to experience that.
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting that so much of our world focuses on things that stay the same, you know, celebrating long marriages, celebrating, you know, long friendships. And yet there is an inspiring celebration that we all can tap into that comes from magical change. You know, that, you know, the story of someone who takes that leap of faith, like you're speaking of, and just goes for it. And it's just like you said, I love that Native American, I wouldn't be able to summarize it, but just like sharing your dream because you don't know who it's for.
Yeah.
You know, that person that needs to hear that someone else did it and gives them that platform upon which they can access the courage to follow that little yearning that's inside them and yeah, and really come through with it. And as, I mean, I'm sure you're experiencing, right? It's not all unicorns and rainbows.
Oh, it is so not all unicorns and rainbows. Yeah. I mean, there is so much beauty and wonder and passion and, gosh, just feeling so incredibly alive. And, you know, along with that has been a very deep, long walk of grief and letting go and saying goodbye.
Yeah. And that can be so applicable to today's moment in time.
Yes.
That we're all, you know, there's so much grief about our ideas of how the world should be and our ideas about so many different things that people can be dealing with, you know, that life is supposed to look a certain way and none of that is happening right now. You know, there's
right.
And there can be so much grief around the way we think it should be and yet the way it is. And yet, I want to pull a quote from what you said earlier. What would it be like for all of us to let ourselves receive, even in the face of chaos and what may seem to be, you know, a climate that we couldn't even have imagined. And the rapid rate of which it's changing is crazy day to day. Is it almost makes me laugh. You're like, okay, brace yourselves. What's the announcement going to be today? Mm-hmm. But I would, you know, in your book, you refer so much to, devotion, I believe. Mm-hmm. And would you say, would that summarize the support that has helped you navigate what you at one time could never have perceived to be the path of your life, right? I mean, if 5 years ago, would you have ever imagined that the choices that you've made, you would make?
No, I wouldn't have. There is a reason, you know, I think why things come to us at the time that they do. And even sometimes there is no reason. So I'm not putting that out there as,
right,
you know, something to look like, always look for and have that black and white solid, whatever. But absolutely, my devotion has been such a huge part of my path for so long, for at least 20 years now, but longer than that. And really falling back on what can I know for sure in this moment, and how can I rest in that? Which goes back to what you just said. I think that is a form of receiving, you know, like letting ourselves receive that truth and rest in something that feels true.
Yeah. In your book, you have a whole lot of self-inquiry and practices that offer the audience, the reader, however you want to, I felt like an audience that I was watching a play unfold, but that supports this idea of devotion that is not reliant upon the external world. It's really about, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's really about what's outside of what we're seeing in front of us as a world. Do you have a way of sort of summarizing or describing how devotion shows up for you in your life? Like, what does it actually look like?
Well, I think that the first thing that I will say is that trusting of the and curiosity of that which cannot be seen, but what is felt and known on a different level. You know, that has been a practice that has sort of organically unfolded for me and has been my devotion. And I've had a lot of structure around that. At times, you know, a lot of that started really showing up for me when I was studying Eastern classics at St. John's and reading the great books of Hinduism and Buddhism and studying Sanskrit, and really, you know, in some ways that was like putting my feet on a yoga mat and practicing, learning, being curious about, asking questions about these incredibly sacred writings that came from so very long ago. Altar building, you know, I do a lot of practices that are actually a mirror of what's happening internally. So I think there's so much power in working with someone and, you know, being invited into their home, let's say, and they're working with a particular challenge, and we build an altar together that embodies both the challenge, but also what is longed for and what they really belong to, what their truth is. And so there can be that as a part of devotion for me. That can be done, right?
Like, I mean, just for our community and it just to apply to right now, right? I mean,
yes.
Going outside and walking in nature is one of the things that is mm-hmm. is allowed.
Yes, thank goodness.
Universally, oh my God. Right now. Yeah. And what yeah. a what a powerful practice to offer the community to go out and gather what you feel drawn to, yeah, and create your own mm-hmm. altar.
Yes.
You know, when you're on your walk, gather what you feel drawn to and bring it back and arrange it however you see fit. Mm-hmm. And notice how you feel when you're in that practice. Wow. Yeah. I love the idea of, you know, depending on what your background is, altar could trigger you if you're, mm-hmm. if you have past mm-hmm. experiences with religion, but speaking that yes. don't, you know, or the opposite, you know, creating an opening to around what an altar may represent and offer you in your life. That's beautiful. And I love mm-hmm. that you did that as a practice with your clients.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I still do. I love doing that.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's an incredible practice.
So if people were, let's do your words. If people were, we don't have too much time left, but if people were to go outside in mm-hmm. an act of seeking out comfort or space or mm-hmm. how would you just pick up what they feel drawn? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that I want to say is just to, like, really tune into your breathing. Like, remember that you are being breathed and that your breath is always moving inside of you. And there is, like, this incredible instant gift that comes when we just pay attention to our mm-hmm. breathing. So, like, going outside and tuning into our own breath, and, you know, you can even take that a step further and, you know, how is the earth breathing wherever you are, through the wind and, you know, leaves moving in the trees or some little flower that's making its way, you know, through the soil after long winter. These tender things. And yes, just naturally allowing yourself to notice if you're drawn to something in particular. Mm. And it might not be anything that you choose to gather. It could simply be, I just want to sit here. Mm. I just want to sit here and breathe for a minute, you know? Then you know, you're becoming the altar.
I love that. Yeah. How simple.
I mean, you always are. And there's something, you know, it's sort of like the being breathed. Like, it's always mm-hmm. happening, but where are we placing our devotion, which is yeah. our focus? Wow. We're all devoted to something mm-hmm. every minute of the day. And so we can choose, how do I want to use this 5 minutes or this 30 seconds, mm-hmm. you know?
What a beautiful practice. Said so beautifully with your very soothing voice. I think you should do an audio reading of your book. I think I know you well enough that I could hear your voice through it.
But
I think it would be even more powerful. But
I would love to do that, actually.
The yeah. audience, the book is called The Mistress of Longing, and it is an opening, an invitation, a book of wisdom, an opportunity. You don't have to read it from beginning to end. You can just mm-hmm. flip through it and find a word, a pearl of wisdom. And I love that word that you use, an opening. And then I'm mm-hmm. going to read one of the quotes from probably the middle of it.
Okay.
That's so simple. That says, you are so much more than you know. Mm. And I think the book continues to offer that invitation to be developed by each person that's reading it in so many different facets and ways of their lives. And what would it be like for all of us to be devoted to realizing that we are so much more than we know. Mm. And with that, I want to thank you so much, Wendy, for joining us for this hour. Mm. I hope we can do it again sometime.
I'd love to.
And could you share one last, you know, how to get your book again for the audience?
Yes. Yes. You can find The Mistress of Longing at both the publisher's website, which is womancraftpublishing.com, or on Amazon.
Fabulous. So it always goes so fast, but it's such
it
a
does.
Pleasure to connect with all of you out there in the audience. A big thank you to Zach, our producer, and this beautiful Truth is Funny community. Colette will be back next week, Wednesday at 8 a.m. And any parting last two words you have, Wendy?
Don't forget to breathe.
Beautiful. So goodbye to all for now, and I look forward to speaking with you next month. Thank you again, Wendy.
Thank you, Karen.
You've been listening to The Truth is Funny with Colette Steffen. Tune in to The Truth is Funny with Colette Steffen each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network as she provides energetic shifts and consistent results in every area of life, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. The Truth is Funny. Visit thetruthisfunny.com for more information. That's thetruthisfunny.com.